Well, if you've seen the title or the post on the member page, you'll know what our topic is going to be tonight. I'm taking a one-week break from Ezra and Nehemiah. We finished up Ezra last week and then picking up the introduction of Nehemiah as well. And then next week, we'll be picking up Nehemiah chapter 1, verse 1. But I wanted to take some time while I have an opportunity with nobody else physically here in the building with me to explore a thing that I have mentioned in other sermons and in discussions and in Bible studies before, but never all in one sitting, and that is my own personal conversion story. And so if you already know the story and you want to go ahead and stop watching, that's fine, but I realized this week that I did not have a video of me just candidly discussing the events that led to me becoming a Christian, and then in the broader scope, me deciding to become a minister as well. So I wanted to kind of go through the events that led me to where I am. I'm going to be doing my best to remember the important details. It's been a little while, so I'm not going to remember all of them, and definitely not in order, but I have some helps with me. I've got some books that I've been given, and this will jog my memory to the exact moment and the dates of the important events take place. But before I jump into it, I want to discuss why I want to talk about this, and it was brought to my attention this week. I was giving a passenger in my car the usual spiel. We got to talking. I picked this individual up at his place of work, and they got in the car and were driving to the person's house. It's been a long day, apparently. And so the person asked me what I did full time. And I said, well, you know, I drive 3 days a week to pay for schooling and to meet people and drive around Charleston. It's a beautiful city. But I'm a full-time minister in West Ashley. And so that conversation comes up, I mean, at least half the time when I have a passenger in the car longer than 5 minutes. This person wasn't going very far. And so the person heard that I was a minister, and you either get kind of one or two reactions. One is you have someone who is fully in support of the work and knows about God and believes in the Bible, usually as the Word of God and that kind of deal, and they encourage you to say, oh, it's great that you're out here meeting people, it's great that you're doing this, you know, good luck to you, God bless you, that kind of deal. And then you got the people that kind of are made uncomfortable by it, and so that's the last thing I'll say about it in the vehicle. If they kind of seem like they get tense or they're nervous or they're or whatever the case, you know, I don't want to make anyone feel uncomfortable. I'm there to provide a service, which is to take them from point A to point B. And if I happen to meet people along the way and sow some seeds and leave some good impressions, that's my ultimate goal. But this person, when I told them I was a minister, they said, that's great. And there should be more of you out there. And I go, well, great. I'm glad that you're supportive of that. And I said, you know, I told the person, either you have people that have some kind of religious trauma in the past and they don't like religion anymore, or they're supportive like you. And this person did have some religious trauma in their past, and they told me about that thing that happened to them and how they got over it and how they've been processing all the events. And long story short, I have 2 minutes left with this person in my vehicle. And the person says, so how'd you become a preacher? And I go, well, I see here on the GPS, you got 2 minutes left, and that's not enough time to even give you the Cliff Notes version. So here's my business card. You know, we have a website. Look me up. I got videos on YouTube, and they're on Facebook. And if you really want to know how, you know, what led to me becoming a minister and being here in Charleston, then, you know, check it out. I'll make a video about it. And so that's what I wanted to do, was not for just that individual, but for anyone that may ask me that question. Now I'll have a resource that may be helpful. I'm reminded of the book of 2 Corinthians. There's almost two entire chapters in which Paul talks about himself talking like a fool, and he continues anyway. And the foolish thing he was talking about is his own personal accomplishments in religion, when it came to education, when it came to a position of power as a Pharisee, when it came from what stock he came from, when it came to his family line. So I understand that this conversation about how I came to Christ is not It should not be anything more than really just a description of the events that led to me becoming a Christian. It has no more, has not as much weight as the Bible by any means. But the more I tell the story to people, the more odd it sounds to me every time. So I wanted to kind of recap the events that led to me becoming a Christian for my own sake of memory, to kind of have it in a video format, and then to be able to use that as a resource to answer the questions that people may have about my own personal story. So take that for what it's worth. Again, a little bit different than what I normally do, obviously, and I want to do it once and then probably do it hopefully justice and then be done for the day. So let's begin at the beginning, so usually a good place. My own background is I have a mother who I lived with until I was 18 years old. 17? Maybe 17 years old? 18 years old. Yeah, 18 years old. And my father was in and out of the picture. He was there. Sometimes he was there. He was away doing work other times. And that's a very complicated story. But I tell you about my parents first and foremost because I did not grow up in a religious environment, per se. My mother is a Christian, and she believed that she was a Christian her whole life, from what I understand, and she had a Bible next to her bed. I do remember that as a young boy, thumbing through there and knowing to go to Matthew, because Matthew seemed important, and then reading the genealogy, getting confused, and putting it down. That's how much Bible I knew when I started this whole process. So nothing, really. I knew there was a guy named Matthew, apparently a guy named Jesus. I heard about a guy named Peter once, but I didn't know who anything else or anybody else was. I had no idea that the Bible is a compilation of 66 books in the canon, and you have half basically the Old Testament, which is for the Hebrews and or the Israelites, and then you have Matthew through Revelation, which is the 27 books of the New Testament, which we're under today. I didn't know that the Gospels were four different versions of the same story, but the life of Christ. I didn't know anything. I was a blank slate. When that was really helpful for me is I was not bringing any knowledge or baggage or false teaching to the table. I didn't know anything, and I knew that. So I couldn't even pretend like I knew what I was talking about at all. So the very first thing that launched me into thinking about spirituality and religion and the big questions like, why are we here? Do I have a purpose? Do I matter? All those important, significant questions was in fifth grade when I was in a 10-year-old kid. I was in the lunch line, and I was waiting to get that rectangular, greasy piece of pizza. And I was going to get that pizza, and I was going to pat the napkins on there and pull all that grease off and then put ranch dressing on it, and then that was going to be my lunch. I was looking forward to it. But while I'm waiting to get to the actual place to order your food or tell the lunch lady what you want, one of my classmates, a young black lady, she asked me, do you believe in God? And I never really thought about that before, but my answer was yes. And then she said, why? And the thought that came to my brain that I remember was, well, my mom says there's a God, and she talks about God sometimes, and this book, apparently, the Bible is written by God, so that's all I know. So I didn't really answer her. I think we just stopped the conversation right there because I didn't have an answer for why. I'm like, I don't know. And it was not a big moment. It didn't change my life from that point forward, but it definitely did get me to think about things that were not just, you know, what do I have to do today? Do I have my shoes on? Do I have my jacket? Do I get on the school bus? Am I in the right lunch line? Have I done enough homework to not fail this class? That was a big moment that I realized there are things that are more important than my day-to-day and then my cartoons. There's a bigger question here. And again, I was 10 years old and didn't know anything, and I just kind of thought, well, I don't know if there's a God or not. And so that kind of sparked, you know, a change in the way that I was thinking. And then really what happened was I went through middle school, and that was terrible. Went through high school, and that began terrible. I was not a popular kid, believe it or not. There's a lot of stuff going on, but I had a tough time in high school. I got to ninth grade, and in ninth grade, you have all the kids from middle school come together into one high school in Gloucester County, Virginia, and it's one big high school, and you don't really fit in very well, or at least I didn't, and there's no one kind of like you around, and you don't have a lot of friends. You have folks that can stand you, but you don't have close friends. I didn't. And so I was trying to find, I think, my place. I was trying to figure out who I was and what I was all about, and I didn't really have an answer. I had a strange childhood when it came to not having two parents there all the time. I didn't have a whole lot of exercise in expressing how I was thinking or how I was feeling. That was kind of muted in my own mind. I couldn't express myself well. In ninth grade, things were, getting complicated. I was making decisions about who my friends were going to be, and I was thinking about what I wanted to do with the rest of my life, as ninth graders often do, thrown into a high school, and that's, you got 4 years to figure it out, and then you're on your path to whatever you're supposed to be. And I didn't really have an answer, but I knew that I liked the structure of the military, I guess, because you had someone that you could look to and ask questions, and they give you orders, and you go do those things, and now you have a purpose. So I thought, well, I'm going to go into the military. And so my first thought was going to the Army. And then I heard Army from my parents was not safe, I guess, was their concern. And so I said, okay, I'll be a Marine. And they go, even worse. I go, all right, well, I'll go to the Navy. And then my plan was to join the Navy. And I wanted to, because I saw a movie or two about these guys, I wanted to be a Navy SEAL. Now, we know all about those now, but my mom didn't know what that was at the time. She goes, that sounds safe, a SEAL, on the coast, that sounds good. And I go, great. And so that was my kind of loose goal, and I didn't really set it as a goal. It was just kind of a thought of what I was going to do. So fortunately, our high school had an NJROTC program, the Naval Junior ROTC office, right? So you have kind of a lower standard of what to do in high school, but it gives you some experience in putting on a uniform and making sure things are measured out to the right things, make sure it's pressed and shine your shoes, that's a big deal, and learn how to march and all kinds of just standard stuff. And so I did ROTC for I think it was two and a half years. And then I'll tell the story about why I quit, I guess. Okay, so trying to figure it out. Again, not popular, don't have a ton of friends, trying to figure out what my life's all about. And then that nagging question was always kind of still there. Why am I doing this? Why do I have to go to school? Why do I have to, is the purpose of life to just get through school and then get a job and then find a woman and start a family and then just keep working till you retire? I just, as a young kid, I just didn't see the point of any of that, and I was a bit nihilistic. Nothing really mattered. Nothing really, nothing was really of importance. So I trudged through ninth grade. And then I got to 10th grade, and I guess this is when everything happened. Let's see. Again, I was curious about religion, Christianity specifically. I had done some reading about Buddhism and Hinduism, and I tried meditation. I tried to find inner peace, and I remember the more time I spent with myself alone in my head, the worse I felt. And so I remember thinking, well, there's no inner peace in there. So if Buddhism says you need to go inside and then suppress your desires, and then that's going to make you feel content, I was not jiving with that at all. I did not find that to be enjoyable. Again, now I know about meditation and calming anxiety and all those things. That's helpful. But as a kid who's full of angst and questions, just sitting there and just dwelling in my own mind, trying to relax, was not helping me at all at the moment. And so I abandoned Buddhism, or whatever I thought Buddhism was, and then I decided to go after Christianity because it was around me. I had places I could go and questions I could ask to figure out the answers. I remember asking a guidance counselor once when I was dealing with depression, I go, what's, you know, do you believe in God? Is there a point to life? Why are we here? And the guidance counselor got very uncomfortable because from what I remember, they were a Christian of some brand, but they couldn't talk about it in school openly. And so she gave me answers that was really, general, and it didn't help me at all. It just made me feel like, so you don't know either. That's the feeling I left the conversation with was, okay, so you don't know. All right, well, if you don't know, I better figure it out because I'm not going to keep going down this path and not having any answers. Again, the depression kicked in. The teenage years for me were a little bit rough. And so I went to a place called Union Baptist Church in Gloucester County. It's probably the biggest church, the biggest Baptist church anyway, in our county. And a lot of the guys that I knew from classes and girls from classes, they went there too. And this is where a friend of mine, he is named Alan Moore. And Alan Moore, we called him Alan 1, I'm Alan 2, because see his name is A-L-A-N, so Alan 1, 1-L. And I'm Alan 2, because I have two L's. He gave me this NIV paper Bible that he was carrying around in his backpack. And I didn't try to read it, but I thought in my infant mind of Christianity, I thought just kind of like having it was an important thing. Like if I carried it, then maybe it was like a good luck charm and I would figure all this stuff out if I just had a Bible with me, because I don't know what these words are. And he underlined some things, you know, got Proverbs here, Proverbs 27, don't boast about tomorrow for you don't know what a day may bring forth. I mean, how funny is that, that you read that right now. But, I understand, that this is a book that people say God wrote, and then I don't understand any of it, so I better try to figure out what it says. I went to Union Baptist twice, on Wednesday or Thursday night, whatever the midweek service was, and I went to their youth deal, because I was a youth. And so I knew a couple people there. I got a guy named Jordan, who I was friends with, a guy named Alan, who I was friends with, kind of more acquaintances with these two guys. And they were about to go to church camp. I remember that clearly. And the first week I went there, they played a CD of like Christian songs, and they would sing along with the CD player. I didn't really know the words, and they had a Bible class. They talked about the book of Joshua, I think it was, if I remember right. And so I didn't understand any of that either. So I'm just kind of just there trying to soak it up, and I'm not getting any of it. And then the second week I went, they were in their little youth building, and they were going to go to church camp, and the church youth pastor lady was there, and she was just laying down the rules about, you not to behave in this kind of way, and this kind of way, and this kind of way, and if you do, there's going to be consequences. Now I understand you got to set some rules down for the kids to behave at church camp, right? I understand that. But when I was there as a visitor my second week, and I'm here with my Bible trying to learn something, and you're not talking about the Bible at all, you're just giving out rules that you follow or else, that really rubbed me the wrong way. And so I remember my mom dropped me off, and it was right down the road, and she got home. I used my little track phone, my prepaid cell phone, to call her and say, can you come pick me up? And she goes, I just dropped you off. And I go, well, I don't want to be here, so I'll be waiting if you want to come pick me up. So she came and she picked me up, and I'm sure she was frustrated. I would be too. If I just dropped you off and all the way got home and then I call you to come get me again, I get it. I understand. But it didn't sit right. It didn't feel right to me. I do remember a big hurricane came by, and I worked with the Union Baptist Church to help do cleanup stuff a couple days. And then I remember getting a bunch of money for my birthday and putting all my money in this envelope, and then I went to the youth pastor lady before this second week, and I gave her all the money as like a contribution to put towards the disaster cleanup. And I don't remember her either thanking me for doing that or recognizing what I was doing, but I left like, I saved all that money for my birthday or for Christmas or whatever it was, and I give it over to the work of doing good things, and I don't even get a thank you. And again, I was a kid, so I don't, it was difficult. So I remember all of that kind of happening, and I go, this is not the place. And so I went with my cousin to the Lighthouse Worship Center, which I understand now is an Assembly of God or Pentecostal church. And they had a huge youth deal. And it was, I remember, Thursday nights, you go there at like 5 or 6 p.m., and they were in their giant like auditorium area, and they had a rock band that was playing. And they'd go, and they'd you know, play the songs, and you'd hang out. And I brought my Bible with me trying to learn something. And then they weren't even talking about the Bible at all. They're just, I guess they're doing praise worship or whatever. So I didn't get that at all. I'm like, are we doing a Bible study or what? And they go, no, we're just having the concert. I'm like, oh. All right. So I went there a couple of times and nothing really happened. And so I go, well, that's not the answer either. And so I'm still going through all this and I don't know what the answers are. I don't know what's happening. And I have a Bible and I have questions and there doesn't really seem to be anyone who knows the answers to them. We're all just kind of running through this, you know, this mechanism of whatever people are doing. And so a couple of things happened. I had a friend, a female friend who was in high school with me, and she invited me over to her house to hang out with her. And her parents would be there, and they were going to be going to church. And so if I wanted to hang out with her, I would have to go to church. And I go, sounds fine. I'm actually looking for a church to kind of go to. And so maybe I'll try your place. And so we went, and the way I often describe it in conversation, I don't know if this is true or not, but it seemed like she was trying to leave the church, and I was trying to join it. That's kind of how I think about it now. Don't know if that's fair or not, because I don't know her heart or any of that, but just by the way things felt, seemed like she was not interested in going to church. But I remember the very first week we went, and it was a group of people that did not meet in a church building. They met in a hotel lobby one time, they met in a school classroom one time, and they met in people's homes one time. So I understand what that is now, is they were a smaller group that didn't have enough money for a church building, and so they were meeting in rented places that they could use to have worship and Bible study. So the first week we went, and we were in a hotel lobby, and there were songbooks. It might be these songbooks, in fact, the same brand anyway. But they had songbooks, and they had Bibles, and they all, it was a bunch of families, and you had a main guy, and he'd stand up, and he'd talk for a while, and then you kind of, you know, you pray, and then you do some stuff, and everything just kind of seemed fairly normal compared to the rock concert, and then the weird church camp thing that happened at the Baptist church. So I went to that one. I think I went on a Sunday morning as well one time, and then I remember specifically a Bible study in someone's home. We were all sitting around this dining room table or this dining room kitchen area, and the main guy was talking, and he was a young guy, and I remember he asked the question, if an angel came down from heaven right now and sat here on this coffee table and told you to do something to be saved or to have salvation or whatever his phraseology was that was different than the Bible, what would you do? And I knew the answer to this because, of course, I did. So I raised my hand. He called on me. And I said, well, I mean, it's pretty obvious. This angel just came from heaven. This book is really old. So you got to go with the new information. I mean, things may have changed. Who knows? And so, you know, you listen to the angel. He goes, well, that's interesting. Let's go to Galatians chapter 1. And so you go to Galatians chapter 1, which I didn't know what that was. And he read the verse to me, talked about if we or even an angel from heaven preach any other gospel unto you than that which you have received, let him be accursed. And so I read all that, and I understood it, and I go, well, I didn't know that. Because of course I didn't. No one ever showed me before. And so I that's the first moment where I was like, oh, this book has answers to questions that I have that I think I already know the answer to, but I'm wrong. Because it talks about it explicitly. I go, well, maybe there's something to this. And so I remember asking my friend, what's the name of this group? Like, where do I find more of these kinds of people? And she goes, well, they call themselves the Church of Christ, right? And that's kind of roll the credits moment. But no, it's Church of Christ. I go, okay. So that's this, I know Baptist Church, I know Pentecostal or Assembly of God, and now there's this thing called Church of Christ. And so, I don't remember how long it was, but my mother and I were driving down the road, and we were driving on old 17 compared to new 17. It was kind of a smaller two-lane as opposed to the four-lane that they just built, 19, whatever. And we see this church building, and I notice it's called the Gloucester Church of Christ. And I go, that's the same group. So I wonder if it's the same thing. So maybe instead of going to Williamsburg, which is, you know, an hour away, hour and 15 minutes away from Gloucester, maybe I can go to this one and get the same kind of thing. So I look them up in the Yellow Pages when that was still a thing we used, and I called the Gloucester Church of Christ, and I left a voicemail on the answering machine, and my question was, how do you guys dress? Like, what do I need to wear to come to church there, was my question. And the preacher, Robbie Brunges, called me back and got my voicemail and said, you can wear whatever you're comfortable with. You know, I'll be wearing a suit and tie. There are other guys that just wear ties and no jackets, but you can wear whatever you have is fine. Just come. I go, okay. And so I remember it was a couple of weeks later, and I woke up for some reason on a Sunday morning early enough for my mother to say, do you want to go to that church today? And I said, yeah. So I got dressed to go to church that day. And later she tells me that she was surprised that I said yes. She didn't really know how committed I was to actually following through with it, but I, you know, apparently was. And so my mother pulled up at the Gloucester Church of Christ before worship, I think it was. I didn't go to Bible class, I don't think. Before worship, and then she dropped me off and she left. And so I walked into the church building, and I remember walking up the steps and opening the door. There's a little foyer. There's bathrooms for men and women. There's a little double doors that you go in, and that's the auditorium, right? So very simple building, but very, you know, easy to understand, easy to remember anyway. And I remember that there is this guy. He's wearing a suit, and he's shaking everybody's hand as they're there. And I go, that must be the preacher. And so I walk over. Are you the preacher? And he goes, yeah. And I go, well, I'm Alan. I called about what to wear. I'm here. Nice to meet you, I guess. And he says, okay. And my very first question to him, I remember, in that hallway was, how do you guys do baptisms here? And I remember that because I read enough of the Bible to realize that there is this thing called baptism. And when people got baptized, it was like they were starting over, right? So I thought of it like a shower. Like if you had a long day doing yard work, you got dirt all over you, and you could take a shower, you feel, you know, so much better afterwards when you're nice and clean. And so I'm like, well, it must be that way spiritually. Ironically, that was my, you know, naive thought of it. I understand what it is now, obviously, and it's not the removal of the filth of the flesh, but an answer of God towards a good conscience, right? But that's how I thought about it, and it kind of made sense to me that way. And I'd actually wanted to get baptized in the Baptist church, and I asked the youth pastor lady what the deal was about getting baptized, and she told me that they had to tell the elders that you want to get baptized. They have to discuss it, vote on it, and then in about 3 months, they have a bunch of people they're going to go take somewhere to get baptized. And so I asked her naively, so where is that in the Bible? And she was kind of like, well, there's all kinds of verses talking about baptism. I go, yeah, but the elders voting on it and stuff, is that in there? And she was like, well, no, it's more of our tradition. And I remember that was the final straw for me with that group. Because I was like, when she said, no, it's our tradition, my brain read that immediately as, we just made this up. So this is what we do because it's arbitrary. And I was already kind of where I was I don't want to follow arbitrary rules for no reason. I need to have a thing that says what to do. And so if you're just making it up, then you're just like everybody else, just making stuff up. That's not what I want to sign up for. And so my first question was, how do you do baptisms here? And Robbie's answer was, we can do it right now. Just go down to the water, baptize you into Christ, I'm sure he said, and then you're done. And I go, well, that sounds better, because it sounds like what they would have done. And so he goes, we can talk about it after worship. You know, we're about to start, if you want to have a seat. So I sat in the back, because of course you sit in the back. And I remember the singing, I didn't know any of the songs at all. Didn't know really what a songbook was. I didn't know that they had numbers on the songs. I remember I'd never sung before in that kind of way at all, you know, not even chorus class. And then I remember the Lord's Supper being passed and thinking, oh, okay, here's a thing. Here's something kind of like the other Church of Christ I went to. They passed the Lord's Supper too. And I remember who it was. I'm not going to call him out, but one of the guys who was in the youth group was serving on the table, and he went to me, and he, like, skipped me, and I felt like, hey, excuse me, in the middle of worship. And he was like, oh, I'm sorry, did you do it? I'm like, yeah, I want it. Don't exclude me. Like, I'm trying to be included here. And I remember being, like, upset, and now I understand why it's so funny that he would skip me, because I wasn't, like, you know, I wasn't a Christian. But it was just funny that I remember, you know, not wanting to be excluded from something that they were doing, because I felt like this is the group that I kind of understand the most, and so don't exclude me. I remember that. Okay, so I also remember the sermon that morning from Robbie, and Robbie got up there, and you know, I use it for an illustration sometimes. He said, well, you know, this morning we're talking about Paul. And we all know about Paul, and that's the way he started. And I remember thinking, Paul, there's a guy named Paul in the Bible? I never heard of this guy. I know about Jesus and about Peter, but I've never heard this Paul reference before. So I'm like, well, I want to try to listen, but I don't know who Paul is. And so I remember thinking, like, the whole time, like, I don't know what he's talking about. And I try to remember that now because, you know, the statement is never underestimate the ignorance of your audience. And really, it's a harsh way to say, if you make assumptions about who people know in the Bible, the answer may be, you know, nobody, like me. I don't know anyone besides Jesus and Peter. Don't know who they were, but I knew they were there. So he continues on. I didn't understand that you had to mark in the songbook for the invitation song. I didn't catch that. I didn't know what that meant. And so when they were singing a song, I'm looking around like, I don't know what song this is. So I just kind of mumbled the way through it. And then at the end, I guess I could have responded to the invitation, but I didn't know what that was either. I didn't understand that you come forward to say stuff. I know what that meant. That was so foreign to me. I had no idea what that was. And then I remember talking to Robbie afterwards. I go, hey, I got some questions. Do you have time to sit down with me and answer some of my questions? He goes, yeah, sure. So we went to the back office, his study, and I just sat down in the chair. He sat down in his chair, and he goes, what questions do you have? And I remember asking him specifically about who Paul was. And then he's like, really? I just talked about Paul for like an hour or half an hour. I'm like, I don't know who he is. Also, what's probably about angels? I was really confused about who angels were. So I maybe asked him about that, I'm pretty sure. And then baptism again, I'm sure. And then he just kind of, the thing that I remember about every question that I asked him, he always told me where to turn, book, chapter, and then about what verse. And he would actually turn there with me, show me where it was, and have me read it. And so that reinforced the concept that every question I've got, there's an answer in this book if I can just figure out where it is. And now, the first day I went to the Gloucester Church of Christ, when I walked in, I have the date here. Thankfully, this Bible was given to Robbie. This is a Zondervan King James Study Bible, right? It was given to him by somebody else and said, if you can find someone that this would help, go ahead and give it away. And so he said, I just happen to have a new Bible for you if you want it. And I go, absolutely. I had the Living Bible with me that day. I remember that. And so that was December 5th. 2004. I was, I graduated in 06, so I would have been in 10th grade, right? My math computes on that. So in the middle of 10th grade, I guess. It's got my name in here spelled correctly. That was a big deal. His name, what date it was, and then he put at the end, may the truth always lead you. And now whenever I give someone a Bible, I try to remember to put that inscription there because that meant a lot to me. That he says, I am letting the truth lead me to where I'm supposed to go. I'm like, all right, well, that's what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for lies. I'm looking for the truth here. Now, I wanted to get baptized that day. So I called my mom, and I was really excited. And I said, listen, I found the place. I like it here. I'm going to get baptized. And she goes, wait, because she's used to like the Baptist church baptism where if you do that, you're then a part of that group and they can hound you forever. And she wanted to make sure I was doing the right thing. She goes, let me go with you next week and we'll talk about it. And I'm like, all right, good enough. So when I was baptized, apparently it was 2 weeks later, Alan was baptized 12/19/04 by Robbie. My mom wrote that in my Bible after I was baptized. And then, of course, she was baptized, I think, soon after that, maybe a week or two. She had questions, and then she got answers. So this Bible means a lot to me because this is an artifact of me being, I guess, courageous enough to go by myself and ask questions to people who I thought knew the answers. But more than that, this Bible to me shows me what I was learning. Every week when Robbie would preach, or Jake, his brother, he moved back in, and he was kind of our youth guy for a little while I was coming up in the faith. And this study Bible has pictures, and it's got explanations, and it shows you maps, and it's got all kinds of stuff in here that was very helpful for me to actually learn the book, which started my love of the Bible. And I don't know if I'm sure you can't see that well, but I've got this thing with obnoxious highlights and arrows and explanations and cross-references, and I've ruined this Bible for all practical purposes by the way that I was learning and taking notes, which is fine. I mean, this shows what I was learning, and I remember reading in this Bible verses that I think about now, and I go, I remember where I was sitting and what the topic was when I first read this verse. I'm like, it clicks. So this Bible to me is an artifact of me falling in love with God and His Word by reading it, studying it, and learning it. So this is very, very special to me. It's just a physical thing. It'll fall apart, and I've had to glue it back 3 or 4 times and put pages back where they've fallen out. So it's not the best quality, but it's not the point. I love this Bible because, you know, I learned the gospel through it, essentially. Let's see. So became a Christian. I became a part of the youth group that was there, and they made my life so much easier in the sense that I was a dumb guy before, and I would say stupid things, and I'd get in trouble. And one big event that took place that kind of told me I don't know what I'm doing is I was in my ROTC uniform, and we were in oceanography class, you know, the most important class in the world. And there were these bullies that were in there, and they were picking on me for whatever. And then we had this other guy who was a large fella. I've seen him recently. He's lost all the weight, but he was a big guy, pushing 300. And you know, he was with the bullies, and they were making fun of me in my uniform, you know, saying things I don't want to repeat. And so they were making fun of me for saying it. And I had some words to say to him, and so I told the guy some things I don't want to repeat either. And he got mad about that, and I thought that was the end of it. You know, just telling him off and telling him what I thought about him and stuff. And it was not the end of it. He found me in the hallway after class, and he got me from behind, and he pushed my head into the cinder block pillar between the two doors that were there. Started kicking me in the head with his boots. I got my ensign pin stuck into my collarbone for a little bit. I got beat up in the hallways, is really what it is. And when that happened, that humbled me enough to, you know, launch into this seriously. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not doing a great job of like directing my life myself. I need help. And if God's out there, then I got to figure out who He is and how to get help. So that was kind of a huge catalyst. So after that, again, went to Gloucester, found the truth, obeyed the gospel, told my father about it, told my mother about it, told a family friend, Jim, about it, and tried to show everybody that I could what I had learned, because it was like this huge deal to me that, you know, I've been looking for it, and I finally found it. And like, there's an answer, and I just got to keep learning. And so I brought my Bible with me to school every day. And despite what you may hear about my generation's upbringing in the school system, you know, Bibles weren't banned. You could talk about it. You could start your own. I started a club about a Bible study. And it was between, it was me and two people, and it was from the Gloucester Church of Christ. It was Melissa and a guy named Corey, who was a year ahead of me. And they were the part of the club that we met and talked about the Bible for a little while. And so, you know, I had my Bible on my the side of my desk with me from that day forward. And I was ready to get made fun of. I was ready to be ridiculed. I didn't care. But the thing that really surprised me was I was starting to hang out with one of the guys in the youth group named Corey. And he is the most laid-back, chill guy. He's nice to everybody. He was nice to me. And I remember walking down the hallway with him and him just, you know, yelling at folks that are like, "Hey, what's up, man?" And being nice and being friendly. And I'm like, well, that's interesting. Like, I'd never done that before. I was just so upset at the world. I'm mad at everybody. So I guess being nice sometimes is a nice thing to do. And so I learned from him how to talk and behave like a Christian. I had some words that I was fond of using that I didn't know were inappropriate until I would drop them in Bible classes or Bible studies. And the poor old ladies of the church, they heard my mouth, and so they gave me some forgiveness and some grace for correcting my behavior and language. But anyway, so Corey taught me how to be a nice person, I guess. And I'm thankful to him for that because he made my high school career so much better. The first 2 years, 9th and 10th grade, they were rough. And then the 11th grade was kind of my redemptive period where I was beginning to be nice to people and people could see I was a different person. And I was no longer hanging out with a certain group of people that would bring me down. I was now just off doing my own thing, but being nice. And then my 12th grade year was great because I had friends, people that I'd, you know, gone to high school with that I knew now, they knew me pretty well. And so things were so much better when I became a Christian, so much better. So Corey was a part of the youth group. He was my good friend until he was a year ahead of me. So he was gone my senior year off to college to William & Mary. There was this other person in the youth group who seemed to have had an impact on me becoming a better person. Let's see if I can think of who it was. A girl who was younger than me by 1 year in the same high school that I went to. And she was named Melissa. And so there was this other girl that I was kind of talking to from the youth group, but I didn't get a good feeling from her. I didn't like her because she seemed kind of like a person who didn't really want to be there in the first place. And so I wasn't interested in someone who was not interested in the place that I just found in Christ. But there was this other girl named Melissa. And it just so happened that one Sunday, I think it was night, her parents could not take her to church, and so she got a ride from somebody else. And so the people that gave her a ride, an older couple, Stanley and Glenna, they were on the one side, and then Melissa was down here by herself, not with her father. And so I'm with my mom, and we're in Sunday night worship, and I go, "I'll be right back, Mom." She goes, "Alan, be nice." So I walk over, and I look at Melissa sitting in the pew, and I go, "Is anybody sitting here?" She goes, no. And she slides over. She's got her little Bible with her. Anyway, started talking, started dating almost immediately. I wanted to tell her that I loved her 3 days into dating her, but, you know, I kind of held off on that for a little bit. When I came out of the water of baptism, first thing I asked Robbie was, "When do I preach?" And he was surprised that I asked that, and I understand now why, but I felt like that was a thing that I was supposed to do. Now I know what to do, and there are other people who don't know what to do, and maybe I can learn enough to help teach them and show them what I've been shown, like keep it going. And so from that point forward, it was no longer Navy, it was no longer military, it was I'm going to become a preacher. I don't know what that means yet, but that's what I want to do. I want to dedicate my life to this thing right here that I just found. And so when I started dating Melissa, I go, "Listen, I'm going to be a preacher." And at first she didn't really want to be a preacher's wife because she didn't really know what that was either. And so we were just young, and I go, well, listen, I'm going to go to preaching school. I'm going to go to the one that Robbie went to in Memphis, and he recommends it, so I'm going to go there. You can go with me, but we can get married. And so we had a really good day. I remember 3-4 months into dating. I don't remember the exact timing. I think it was 3 months. And then we had a really good day. I think we went to the beach, and we got some food, and we hung out, and we had a great, great day. And as I dropped her off one night, I was in the front lawn and saying goodbye to her, just dropped to one knee. It didn't have a ring. And then just said, will you marry me? She said, yeah. And so I went and bought a ring. And then we had 2 years to kill before getting married and going to preaching school, because I had 2 years left of school. I had 1 year left of high school. And then she was 1 year behind me. So I didn't know how that was going to work, but we were going to make it work. And so I was now a Christian. I was learning. I was hanging out with Robbie. I was hanging out with Jake. I remember Robbie taking me on my first ever hospital visit. I remember meeting my first person who I knew was going to be dying soon in the hospital and being very uncomfortable, but seeing what Robbie was doing and learning that's part of the job. And then we'd hang out and we'd listen to music, almost exclusively Bob Dylan or the Beatles. I remember we would talk about the Bible a lot, and any question I had, he's always ready to talk about it. And same thing with Jake. Jake was a little bit younger. He was really old, though. He was a really mature guy, because when I first met him, he was 26. And to me, 26 was like a full adult. And so he was cool to hang out with, and we went hiking, and we worked out together a little bit, and he played music, too. So learned a lot from Robbie and Jake. They set me on the right path. They taught me what I know about the Bible, and they showed me how to live it out and what the job I wanted, looked like, because Jake had just come back from Mississippi as a full-time preacher and just taken a break for a bit to figure out what he wanted to do. So fast forward. I graduate high school. I barely show up to high school, to the graduation. I just get my piece of paper and get out of there. I'm now working at a movie theater in Gloucester County, the only one we had, really. And then we actually get a chance to work with Corey, who's a manager. So I'm a manager at some point. And then Jake, the preacher, my brother, the youth guy, he becomes a projectionist. And then we hire basically all the youth group to work there. And so going to work was like going to church for at least half the people that are there. So that was great. I graduate, so I work for the next year at the movie theater, working almost every day, or every night, really. Get home by 5 a.m., and then pass out, wake up at 10 in the morning, and then just go on with the rest of the day. Worked for a year, saved all that money for a year. She graduates from high school. Her parents go down to the courthouse with us, and they sign the paperwork. We have a quick wedding at the church building, just family invited. We get married, and then we move into a friend's house, a family friend's house, for a month until we can pack our stuff and drive to Memphis, Tennessee to go to preaching school. So I'm not sure when we're going to end this, but I'll just give you the fast-forward version. We move to Memphis, become students. We don't have really any money pledged to us every month, so we're just going on faith. I look at it now and I'm like, I'm so glad we made it, but we just didn't know any better, and we just went naively, and everything worked out. God took care of us. We were provided for. Met a lot of wonderful people who shaped our lives and becoming who we are today. Friends that taught me so much about friendship and about what the world was like and what Christian brotherhood was all about. And I've got those friends to this day. So we graduate from preaching school 2 years later. I get a job working for the Charlestown Church of Christ in Charlestown, West Virginia. It's a smaller group, about 50 or so, and they hire a 20-year-old guy from fresh out of preaching school to come be their preacher. Those brethren took care of us. They supported us. They were gracious to us, and they let us kind of get our feet wet in what ministry was like. And we left there after almost 6 years, and then we moved here to the Essex Village congregation in 2015. And so this is going to be our fifth year, or this has been our fifth year last month. And so that's basically it. So that's all the highlights. I mean, I got some stuff in there that I'm sure Melissa will cringe about. But, you know, that's just all the detail that I remember. And I'm so thankful for the opportunity to not only go through all of that to become the person that I am, for all the people that helped us along the way, but also for you, for listening and watching, to be able to hear the story that I never thought I'd have to tell. When you're going through it, I never thought I should remember this stuff, because I'm going to have to tell this, you know, when I have a wife and two kids and preaching at a church in Charleston, South Carolina, and talking on the internet. I never thought any of this stuff. But I'm just thankful that the Lord's brought us this far. One last Bible here for show and tell. This is Robbie, the guy who taught me the gospel. This is his Cambridge leather vest, New Testament and Psalms. I remember him preaching from this very often, and he would use it to gesture at people. And the binding is a little bit worse for wear over the years. But the thing I love about this is the one that he would always have, and it was kind of like a preacher's Bible. You know, if you don't have one of these, you can't be a good preacher. And so I had a new one that I bought when I was in school, and I was happy to give him my brand new one if I could have his old one. And so I remember this from Robbie. I appreciate him doing that deal with me. And in the front, I know you can't see it, but there's verses written in the front that he uses to help remember these passages when he's doing funerals. And so whenever I'm doing a funeral, you know, it's never a happy day per se, but having this in my suit jacket pocket kind of gives me a little bit of strength just to remember if, you know, Robbie did it, he taught me how to do it, then I can do it too. So this is my last one I wanted to show you from back in the day. Everything else I've got is newer, and I've only been using digital stuff for a good little while now, so it's nice to have something physical to kind of hold on to and remember. So I know it's different than the Bible class we normally have. We'll jump into Nehemiah next week, but I wanted to just take this time while I had the opportunity and talk about this stuff. Hopefully you found it somewhat enjoyable. Maybe explains, you know, in more detail the story that I don't really like telling, because it's not about me. It's about the gospel. It's about the Bible. It's about the Word of God. But sometimes it does help to have a little bit of character flavor brought into a person who's trying to teach you. So hopefully you found it helpful. So thanks so much for watching. I'm going to post this to YouTube as well, and then have that available for anybody who really wants the whole story about what's happened. And then hopefully